Russell himself, as a young man, was briefly convinced by it.
I remember the precise moment, one day in 1894, as I was walking along Trinity Lane, when I saw in a flash, or thought I saw, that the ontological argument is valid. I'd gone out to buy a tin of tobacco. On my way back, I suddenly threw it up in the air and exclaimed as I caught it, "Great Scott! The ontological argument is sound!"
Why, I wonder, didn't he say something like,
"Great Scott! The ontological argument seems to be plausible." But isn't it too good to be true that a grand truth about the cosmos should follow from a mere word game? I'd better set to work to resolve what is perhaps a paradox like those of Zeno.
The Greeks had a hard time seeing through Zeno's proof that Achilles would never catch the tortoise.
Achilles can run 10 times as fast as the tortoise, so he gives the animal, say, 100 yards start. Achilles runs 100 yards and the tortoise is now 10 yards ahead. Achilles runs the 10 yards and the tortoise is now 1 yard ahead. Achilles runs the 1 yard and the tortoise is still 1/10 of a yard ahead. And so on ad infinitum, so Achilles never catches the tortoise.
But the Greeks had the sense not to conclude that therefore Achilles really would fail to catch the tortoise. Instead, they called it a paradox, and waited for later generations of mathematicians to explain it, with, as it turned out, the theory of infinite series converging on a limiting value. Russell himself, of course, was as well qualified as anyone to understand why no tobacco tins should be thrown up in celebration of Achilles' failure to catch the tortoise. Why didn't he exercise the same caution over St. Anselm? I suspect that he was an exaggeratedly fair-minded atheist, over-eager to be disillusioned if logic seemed to require it. Or perhaps the answer lies in something Russell himself wrote in 1946, long after he had rumbled the ontological argument.
The real question is there anything we can think of which, by the mere fact that we can think of it, is shown to exist outside our thought? Every philosopher would like to say yes, because a philosopher's job is to find out things about the world by thinking rather than observing. If yes is the right answer, there is a bridge from pure thought to things. If not, not.
My own feeling to the contrary would have been an automatic deep suspicion of any line of reasoning that reached such a significant conclusion without feeding in a single piece of data from the real world. Perhaps that indicates no more than that I am a scientist rather than a philosopher. Philosophers down the centuries have indeed taken the ontological argument seriously, both for and against. The atheist philosopher J.L. Mackey gives a particularly clear discussion in The Miracle of Theism. I mean it as a compliment when I say that you could almost define a philosopher as someone who won't take common sense for an answer. The most definitive refutations of the ontological argument are usually attributed to the philosophers David Hume, 1711-76, and Immanuel Kant, 1724-1804. Kant identified the trick card up Anselm's sleeve as his slippery assumption that existence is more perfect than non-existence. The American philosopher Norman Malcolm put it like this:
"The doctrine that existence is a perfection is remarkably queer. It makes sense and is true to say that my future house will be a better one if it is insulated than if it is not insulated, but what could it mean to say that it will be a better house if it exists than if it does not?"
Another philosopher, the Australian Douglas Gasking, made the point with his ironic proof that God does not exist. Anselm's contemporary Gornilo had suggested a somewhat similar reductio.
1. The creation of the world is the most marvellous achievement imaginable. 2. The merit of an achievement is the product of A, its intrinsic quality, and B, the ability of its creator. 3. The greater the disability or handicap of the creator, the more impressive the achievement. 4. The most formidable handicap for a creator would be non-existence. 5. Therefore, if we suppose that the universe is the product of an existent creator, we can conceive a greater being, namely, one who created everything while not existing. 6. An existing God, therefore, would not be a being greater than which a greater cannot be conceived, because an even more formidable and incredible creator would be a god which did not exist. Ergo, 7